Jeff Merrick is an older gentleman, the oldest gentleman on this podcast.
44. I'm an old goat.
Sometimes worry, sir, that you're going to end up being a liability. You know,
In what way? You're going to reach that age.
I think every player reaches a certain age where you say to yourself, you know what, you've given all you can to this great game of ours.
Yep.
But it is past time for you to maybe hit the press box because you're not contributing what we need at this point. And I'm afraid, ladies and gentlemen, that while Jeff Merrick continues to thrive, and I'm sure will continue to push towards the Big 5-0 and be one of the most effective and knowledgeable hockey men in this game, the time may be up for the great Teemu Selänne, a healthy scratch for the Anaheim Ducks against the Dallas Stars in Game 4.
Yeah, Emerson Edom comes in. Now, this doesn't surprise you, does it, Wish?
Someone told me in Sochi, and I don't remember who it was, that they expected Selänne was going to be a healthy scratch in the playoffs. And at the time, it seemed like crazy talk because Selänne was pretty unbelievable, amazing in Sochi, helping the Team Finland win a bronze, playing awesomely with Michael Granlund. The whole thing was great. But, you know, the more you look at the numbers, and by the way, our friend JP from Japers Rink already had the line of the day where he wondered if this is Bruce Boudreau's ochophobia creeping into his mind for playoff hockey based on what happened with Ovechkin in D.C. When you look at the numbers, here are the facts. He's got one assist in three games that came in game one. He has two shots on goal in each of the last two games. 4 points in his last 11. He hasn't scored a goal since March 23rd. And Jeff Merrick, where on the ice do you think, or in what situation do you think Selänne, even at his advanced age, even at a point where maybe he slowed down a little bit, in what facet of the game do you think he would probably still excel?
Oh, it's clear. Killing a 5-on-3.
Oh, no, it's even better than that. Obviously, it would be on the power play, where even the oldest, slowest player can still contribute if they've got the hands.
Yeah.
He hasn't produced a power play point since January 28th.
Yeah, I know. It's back nine. It's shady side of the mountain. All the cliches apply.
Now, obviously,
close to the clubhouse.
You can't separate the fact that also the Ducks got shut out in game three. They looked uninspired. They looked like they were, getting the Stars are starting to get under their skin a little bit. They lose Robidoff for this game, too, and for the series and for the playoffs. They did need a little bit of a conversation changer. From that aspect, I give Bruce
Boudreau
credit.
Do you think, though, he did it to change the conversation, or he just thinks he's putting together his best lineup tonight?
And
he wants someone faster, knowing that he's going to have a hard time winning line matchups.
It's a combination of both. I mean, listen, this isn't, you know, scratching Matthew Perreault, okay? This is scratching a legendary player for the first time all season as the second time in his career he's been a healthy scratch in the playoffs.
Could be worse. I'll tell you how it would be worse, and I think people would be up in arms if it was like this. If this were a potential closeout game against Anaheim, I think there would be legitimate outrage.
Well, it all makes sense, like, because you do get the you do have this thing now where you've got Selänne in your back pocket where you can kind of do the win one for Teemu sort of situation later in the tournament if you needed to be. I mean, there's every reason to scratch him now. But I think anytime that you go ahead and do this to a name player like this, I don't think it can just be strategic. I think there has to be more at play here than just that. And I think that there is for the Ducks and for Boudreau. It's a good move. It makes sense statistically. But, I mean, ultimately, you kind of put your ass on the line, don't you, when you scratch a franchise legend in a game where you have to win in order to go back to Anaheim 3-1?
What's the line from Usual Suspects? How do you shoot the devil in the back? What if you miss?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you scratch Teemu Selänne? What if you lose?
The greatest trick Teemu Selänne ever pulled was convincing us that he was still Teemu Selänne.
Oh, it's so true. Oh, by the way, there is a book coming out about Teemu. I did a piece for Sportsnet magazine last month, and did a little research into the Selänne vibe and what's on the horizon for him. There's a really the most successful documentary that Finland has ever produced is a documentary about Selänne, just called Selänne. And there's a book that's been in the works now for 10 years, and Selänne has always said, when I retire, it hits the printing press. And so that book is hitting the printing press this summer, so it'll be available next fall. Yeah, so it'll be one coming out about Teemu Selänne. That'd be great.
Really cool.
Yep.
What do you think about the Duckies in this game?
I think that there will be something not so nice coming to Roussel this evening, even though it was Ryan Getzlaf even though it was Ryan Getzlaff who punched first, wearing the full cage, and then said afterwards, if I knew a guy had a broken jaw or had a jaw injury, I wouldn't punch him in the face, but I guess we're different. Omitting the, I don't know, uncomfortable little fact that he threw the first punch at Antoine Roussel. But nonetheless, it was Roussel going after their star player, so something comes back there. I expect to see a little more inspired Anaheim Ducks team. I mean, that was a pretty lifeless squad that we saw in Game 3. I expect a better pushback from Anaheim this evening against a Dallas Stars team that isn't as big, isn't as talented, and isn't as deep as Anaheim is. But, tell you what, man, if Kari Lehtinen plays the way he did in Game 3, all bets are off.
That is an interesting factor. And listen, I can't put myself in the shoes of Bruce Boudreau if they lose this series, can you? Like, this is one of the best teams he's ever coached, and this is one of the most favorable playoff matchups he's ever had as a coach.
Yep.
I mean, the idea that they could possibly lose the series, you might as well just get playoff failure tattooed on your big-ass forehead, I mean, for the rest of your life, because this is it. This is the chance to buck the label, or at least help start changing the conversation about the label.
Here's the thing, though. He's never had that label until the NHL. Like, I've said this before on the show. Like, if you look at the history of Bruce Boudreau, he's won everything. Like, going back to junior, he has won everything, either as a player or as a head coach. He has won everything outside of in the NHL. Like, getting into the NHL, the reputation for Bruce Boudreau was he is a winner. Everywhere Gabby goes, he wins. Some people may have not liked his style, may have rubbed some people the wrong way, didn't want him as, you know, the face behind the bench, didn't want that as a representative of their hockey team. But once he got his foot in the door, the reputation he brought with him was this guy's a winner. And it was, you know, the Capitals experience that brought that vibe back down to earth. I mean, I don't know that, I mean, it won't look good on the resume if they bow out against Dallas, but I'm not prepared to call Bruce Boudreau an NHL loser should they bow out against Dallas, which I don't think they will.
Mark C. writes in, Lanny McDonald was scratched a lot in the playoffs in 89, and look what happened.
Totally true. 100% true. And that was his swan song, too. That's 100%.
That's a good point. Yep. Very good point. Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. The other games tonight, obviously, Pittsburgh and Columbus. Chicago, St. Louis, we'll get to both of those in due time. But we've got some games from last night to cover. Mm. It is just me and Jeff today. No guest. Well, occasionally, the Nerdist podcast calls this sort of situation a hostful. We will have a hostful today, and we will have a going postal for you later on. Ask us anything at puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com. But yeah, you know, just rapping about the playoffs, rapping about life.
Come
on and sit on Jeffy and Greg's knee and learn about life and rap about life with us for a second.
We'll tell some stories. Some of them might even be true. Who knows? We'll see what happens over the next 60 minutes. Shakespeare's birthday, by the way, as I mentioned on Twitter, Shakespeare responsible for Strange Brew in a roundabout way, one of our favorite movies, going back and forth with a couple of people about that, most notably Ted Starkey and Ed Frankovic, your buddies from Washington, about how Strange Brew thematically was all based on Hamlet. To the point where Elsinore Castle became Elsinore Brewery in the in the movie Strange Brew, which really is a wonderful delight. Yep. So thank you to my favorite Elizabethan band, Billy Shake and the Speeders.
That's right. Or whoever actually wrote those plays.
Yeah, it's always been sort of shrouded in some controversy, hasn't it been? I mean, we're pretty sure the High Tragedies were his, right? I'd like to think that the slasher plays, like Titus Andronicus, was his. I'd like to think that the early stuff where he was just sort of getting his legs and was just like, I'm just going to fill the stage with blood and dead bodies and someone saying, and I am king, and then the curtain falls. I kind of like to think that that was Shakespeare. Just as his slasher plays early on in his career.
Hey, whatever he did it right. He landed that Fox Gwyneth Paltrow, so everything is cool. Anyways, with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Oh, early today. That's very good. You caught Maddie off guard.
Completely. That was my expectation.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Whenever I catch him off guard, he immediately goes ago,
one of the great thrills was I got to sit around and watch Little Hobo.
He was eating French fries.
Episodes. It may be the greatest theme song I've ever heard in my life.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
The littlest hobo, he's eating out of cans and playing with his dog. Littlest hobo, he's jumping on trains. He needs to jump high because he's so little.
Debate Hockey.
The show's not actually about a hobo?
No, it's about a dog. It's a hybrid of a German Shepherd and a Husky.
The dog's a... It's about a dog?
Yeah, dude. You've never watched Littlest Hobo?
No!
Merrick versus Wyszynski.
Like, I love this idea that there's just, like, fries flying all over the place behind the glass.
Ketchup splattered on the glass.
Fumbling around trying to hit any intro button you can hit.
See, the that's the thing about this podcast. It is it's probably the easiest, like, board gig anyone could ever have. We don't have a lot of production elements. This isn't pa-pa-pa-pow, right? I mean, Lance Kennedy, who works the board for Tim and Sid, that guy's got to stay sharp. That guy's got to stay on it. Here, you got to hit an intro and then an extra. Other than that, all the french fries you want. But just make sure Greg calls for the intro. Maddie does say, going postal, in fairness, he does have three things. But that's only once a week, though, Maddie. Jeez. It's a pretty easy gig.
Let's talk about the scourge of... French-Canadian referees fixing games for the Montreal Canadiens. Could we talk about that for a second?
I was surprised about that. I really was. I was surprised that conversation went that way.
Why?
At the moment. Because Ron's an official. I was just surprised that conversation would even come up on Hockey Night last night. And you know what? Elliot took Twitter away and said...
Hold on. But that's why he apologized. I mean, he's... Like I said on the blog this morning, I mean, he's more in the bag for referees than a whistle. Like, he's clearly, like, I mean, I think he realized the error of his ways, but I think all he was doing was just parroting what everybody else says at some point about the Montreal typical thing that Laviolette pointed out.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, Montreal. And you know, it's an easy one to fall back on, but until I see evidence of, you know, officials fixing games based on geography, or like wildly slanting games based on geography. I just want. And here's the thing as well.
Hold on. See, that was the thing that I didn't quite get in his mea culpa, was this idea that he's like, well, I would say the same thing if it was an Albertan referee who screwed the Lightning, and the next day that they had to play a game against Edmonton or Calgary, and an Albertan referee was no. You're talking about something much deeper than geography, sir. You're talking about culture. You're talking about heritage. You're talking about referees giving the benefit to a French Canadian identified franchise because it is culturally important that they do so. It's not simply because they were born in Quebec. It's because they're trying to influence the game to put over the flag bearer for francophones. That's, I mean, it goes beyond geography what he's accusing them of.
Here's where it's factually incorrect. The insinuation that Francois Saint-Laurent got the assignment for game 4 as a message to John Cooper. The way it actually works, and I checked with this morning, the way it actually works is Stephen Walkham assigns referees at the beginning of each round for the first 5 games. And then after 5 games, so for games 6 and 7, based on, you know, who's performing well, which is always the standard, he makes his decisions after that. But the first 5 games are set. So there was no like, okay, we're going to put Francois Saint-Laurent in there. We're going to show that John Cooper. Like, that was at the beginning of the series. Game 4 was going to be Francois Saint-Laurent. It was going to be that. That's why I kind of saw the segment and I said, that's like, it's just wrong. Like, that's not the way they do it.
I do love the conspiracy aspect of it, though. Like the French Canadian community would want to stick it to Tampa Bay. Oh, you let Vincent Lecavalier go. You let Martin Saint-Louis go. Oh, you don't give Julien Brisebois a general manager job. You give it to Steve Yzerman. Why do you hate the French?
That's their retirement community, for crying out loud. Well,
no, I thought the whole thing was interesting only because he was voicing something that a lot of people say, but the way I give Ron McLean credit, man. Like, I'm a terrible apologizer. Like, I will fall on my sword to make something go away very quickly. Ron McLean has the most unique gift of being able to apologize for something, but at the same time, not apologize for it. He always does this. It's amazing. Last night's was, well, all I was trying to say was that the NHL should be wary of the perception of bias that the Tampa Bay Lightning could probably have if a French-Canadian official was allowed to officiate Game 4. So it's not that Rob McLean thinks that French-Canadian officials give Montreal the benefit of the doubt. It's the Tampa Bay Lightning probably could feel this way, so let's not allow them to even have the opportunity to feel this way because it's so crazy somebody would.
You know, so much of this
amazing apology.
So much of this is a byproduct, and again, I don't get it because I'm not a fan of any particular team. I don't cheer for any particular team. I don't care who wins a hockey game, but I think the vibe around it. And listen, you talk to any hockey fan and anyone that you work with who follows hockey, and they'll tell you the same thing. You can't get your mind around the idea of someone being absolutely impartial in a game. I get it because I feel that way. I don't care who wins a hockey game. I just want to see a good hockey game. And I think that I have never personally seen, outside of one example, and the official has since passed away, one example of an official who gave the strong appearance of being biased towards a team, and that was Art Scove, who in the 1970s during the Philadelphia Flyers' first run, I mean, it was to the point where, remember Emil Francis talked about this in his book, or one of the books that I read, Emil Francis, who was running the Rangers at this point. The Rangers were at the Spectrum, and they put up on the Jumbotron, and here are the Philadelphia Flyers, Bill Barber and Bobby Clark and Bernie Parent, and officiating today's game, Art Scove, who, when he officiates a Flyers game this season, are 15-0. That was on the Jumbotron. They gave the officials record when officiating that home team. Optically, didn't look good. And then, here's where, and you want to get conspiracy theorists? Okay, snuggle up with Jeffy on this one. One of the most famous fights in Flyers history is in a Rangers Philadelphia Flyers series. It is Dale Rolfe, who's a pretty tough guy, defenseman, and Dave Schultz. It's the one where Schultz grabs his hair and just doesn't stop punching him in the face. Like, it is a beating. It is one human being beating another to the point where almost everybody on the ice, you can say, is saying, hey, stop this fight, end this fight. The referee who calls the linesman off, who doesn't allow them to jump in and break off the fight, is the aforementioned Art. Doesn't look good. Now, there have been other incidents where, and I can think of one specifically, and it was a series between the Philadelphia Flyers and the Toronto Maple Leafs, where Ed Snyder, owner of the Philadelphia Flyers, went berserk after a game because the officials were from Toronto in that. So there is that vibe out there, but to me, it's always just been such a lazy excuse when your team doesn't do well. Both officials are from the home team.
Well, what pisses me off, though, is that, like, yeah, the vibe is out there, and there's a lot of people that'll go to that as an excuse, or McLean will voice this this indirect accusation that French-Canadian officials are in the bag for Montreal. But when it comes to Team Sweden being a little edgy about Canadian officials being in the gold medal game, everybody's like, you crazy bastards, you IKEA-buying nutjobs, how dare you impugn the good name of Canadian. These men have worked all their lives to be in this position. You idiots are, go drink your lingonberry juice, you crazy quists. I mean, that's what we got, right? And now, listen, McLean basically does the same thing.
In the 70s, it was the same thing when Canada would play the Soviet Union. And, I mean, the touchstone was actually a German referee in Joseph Kampala. But whenever there was a Russian official involved in any of the games, right away it was an issue. So as much as, you know, Canadians like to say, oh, no, we've played that card plenty in our past.
Paul Stewart has said for years, and I agree with it, there simply aren't enough American officials. There's a big disparity as far as the geography of officiating.
When you consider the godfather of a lot of officials, one of the most influential officials, maybe the most, if he was the first guy to use actually hand signs for calls, Bill Chadwick was American. Right? I mean, it's not as if, you know, the U.S. official is a, you know, hey, look at, who's this Kevin Collins fellow? Oh, look, he's from the United States. Imagine that. Okay, but you know, but here's the thing.
I wish we understood the game better. Is my problem. You know, it's.
I don't know.
If it was baseball, we'd all be umpires. I mean, we know that game pretty well. I mean, we just don't know hockey. We're not born with it, man.
I don't know
it's
about
our,
that.
It's not our lifeblood.
I don't know about that anymore.
Our birthright, our ice, our game, our cup. I mean, we don't have that.
I don't know about that anymore. Because listen. One of the things that they do every year is they canvass colleges.
I really didn't pick up on my sarcasm at all.
Oh, really? Okay. Thank God you were. I'm like, what the hell is Wish going on about here? because they canvass, you know, colleges, junior hockey, university hockey, every single year, presenting the case that, listen, there is an option for you in hockey. And, you know, I've talked about this on the podcast a couple of months ago. If I was smarter when I didn't get drafted, damn you, OHL, in the Ontario Hockey League in 1986, you know what I should have done? I should have said, you know what? I'm a pretty good skater. Why don't I try my hand at officiating? Like hindsight being 20/20, I don't live with regret. I mean, you can't live that way. But if I would have changed anything about my life in hockey is when it didn't work out and I sucked out because I didn't get drafted the first time around. I didn't say, well, maybe I'll get drafted next year. I probably should have gone into officiating. I probably would have enjoyed it, still been around the game and been doing something athletic around hockey.
You too can be a National Hockey League official. Skate well? Do you have a passion for hockey? Do you like getting accidentally punched in the face by players in a scrum? Do you like being blamed for all of the ills in the world?
There you go, because, and you nailed it. There is such a stigma about being an official that all you hear is, like, why would you choose that, essentially, is my question. And my brother-in-law is an official, and I always have the same question. Like, when he comes back and complains about, you know, coaches screaming at him and coaches threatening him and parents threatening him to beat him up in the park, like, why do you do it? Like, why would you choose this? Like, knowing how rough it is, knowing how you will never get praise outside of your peers, your immediate peer group, why would you choose this? Like, I think sort of the greater hockey culture is doing their own sport a great disservice by not promoting officiating as a viable and credible option if hockey is not for you.
We'll teach you all of the necessary skills, deciphering obscenities, dodging full beer cups, blowing the whistle with your mind before any sound comes out of your whistle.
I remember talking to Kerry Fraser when I was doing Hockey Night Radio. I said, what's the weirdest thing anyone's ever thrown at you? And he said when he was coaching in the Western Hockey League in junior, I think they were in Saskatoon, it would have been a Blades game, someone hit him with a cowbell from the stands. Someone brought in and threw a cowbell at the official. Yeah, threw a cowbell at Kerry.
Ryan Project writes in, failed ref dreams. Good thing your backup turned out all right, huh, Jeff?
I kind of fell upwards. Right. It's okay. Worked out all right. That's what I'm saying. Like, I can't live with regret.
Oh,
like,
I know.
I don't have to work for a living. I don't have to dodge slap shots.
Personality. People dress me in fine linens all day,
if I
only could have achieved my dream of being an ECHL referee.
I've always wanted to break up a John Morasty fight. I will never know what that feels like.
I'll never know the gentle touch of a John Morasty punch.
They try to pry him off some poor unsuspecting player in the Quebec semi-pro league. Oh, that's funny. That's good.
I'll never know the unbridled joy of officiating a Florida Everblades game against the Orlando Solar Bears.
I probably would have met Tim.
One of those teams has to be defunct by this point, right?
I don't know that either is. Our buddy Paige Lewis was off to see an Orlando Solar Bears game, I think, last week or a couple weeks ago. Yeah, they're still around.
There you go. All right, so Montreal sweeps. What was the most impressive thing for you in that series from a Montreal perspective?
Outside of the play of Carey Price has to be the play of Brendan Gallagher. And, I mean, here's a guy who 3 goals in the series, a big one yesterday. And to me, the lasting image of doing Hockey Central today, and Sean Gordon brought this up, and it's so true. The lasting image for me from this series will not be the great saves by Carey Price, will not be the Dale Weiss surprise overtime goal in game one, will not be the Max Pacioretty series clincher. It will be Brendan Gallagher on the bench with gauze stuck up his nose as he bleeds all over his face. He's like 5 foot nothing, 170 whatever, maybe 160 nothing pounds. with gauze stuck up his face, smiling. That, to me, will be the enduring image of that opening round, Montreal versus Tampa. What about you?
Yeah, they showed some snarl in that series, and it was good to see. I'll tell you, man, I know a lot of this is because the Tampa Bay defense, and especially in Game 4, the goaltending, although I think Lindback did better in that series than people give him credit for, fell apart. But the Montreal Canadiens had 18 players appear in the series. Mm-hmm. 16 of them had a point. One of the two who didn't have a point, inexplicably, was Andre Markov. The other one was Francois Bouillon, who was, you know, a plus five. But 16 of 18 players had at least a point in that series. That's balance. And you look up and down that lineup. I mean, you see contributions
and
from
Wish.
Bork, from Gallagher, from Plekanec. Vanek had his moments. Pacioretty scores the definitive goal of the series. Desharnais. Briere continues to be a factor.
Pause there. Danny Briere. Okay? Regular season, this guy can't play. Oh, he's done. Get rid of him. He can't play. Keep scratching him. Danny Briere is done. And then the playoff shows up, and it's a different guy. You know, one of the interesting things about Montreal this year, we're away from the Roger Doucet era of doing the national anthem. The city has almost been, you know, regalvanized with Jeanette Renaud, who is this French-Canadian singer. She's won a number of Genies and Juno Awards, platinum-selling Canadian musician. Her anthems, I mean, this is like Kate Smith in Montreal. Like, I know we've said before on the podcast that the two places that do ceremonies properly are Buckingham Palace and the Bell Centre. And you just add a whole new layer with Jeanette Renaud doing the anthem. The place goes, honestly, wish berserk. And Danny Briere had a really interesting comment as well, because his mom, who passed away, was a huge fan of Jeanette Renaud. And Danny Briere is, you know, talking after one of the games, and he's saying, you know, my mom always, you know, told me about her, and she, we used to have her music around the house. And when I hear her sing, it's the closest I've gotten in years to my mom. And then he goes and scores that goal. Like, Jeanette, it's going to become a phenomenon in Montreal, the Jeanette Renaud singing. It's a fantastic story.
I'm picking up a little vibe from you that you think there might be a little magic to this team.
Here we go, the ghosts of the forum. It's Maurice Richard all over again.
Well, what do you think?
I don't think
now,
so.
Now, let's be honest here. They want the Bruins. They want the Bruins, you know, in the worst way they want the Bruins.
I don't know. Boston right now is kind of pushing around a smaller team in the Detroit Red Wings right now.
They've skated with them. They know they can play with them.
I know.
They can play with them.
And the goaltending duel will be fantastic. And I know there's just something magical when it's the Boston Bruins and the Montreal Canadiens. I'm with you. I think they do want Boston because they match up well with them. They know that PK Subban can drive the Boston Bruins to distraction.
Vanek trade was for a Bruins killer.
Yeah,
I mean, they're in some ways constructed to beat the Bruins.
In some ways, I just don't think that Montreal is there yet. But listen, man, we've seen this happen before with that frickin' hockey team, right? They're not supposed to win in 1993. They're not supposed to win in 1986. It's like the moment where you really can't. They weren't supposed to in 2010 beat Washington and Pittsburgh. Something about this team.
Sure as shit, we're supposed to beat Washington. I can tell you that. Having lived through that series.
Everybody was saying Washington in three, and Montreal would just wave the white wave the white towel. Maybe Roger Nilsson just waving it and calling it a day.
Like, there are certain moments and certain trades and certain things that have a ripple effect through several layers of the National Hockey League. Think about that Montreal series. Think about what that did for Halak. Think about what that did for Plekanec. Think about what that did for Camilleri. Think about what that did to the Capitals' psyche. Mm-hmm. That was like just a neutron bomb that went off that series that sent different impactful pieces in several different directions for the next few years. And that was an amazing series.
One thing I do want to get out there, and this is the one thing I really like about doing this podcast as well, is we get to sort of bring the attention to some of the more lesser-known people that do have an effect on your life in hockey. Like, wish we've talked about Tim Thompson, who does those wonderful montages for Hockey Night in Canada countless times. We had Tim on the program, as a matter of fact. And just mentioning Jeanette Renaud a couple of seconds ago, the game operations in Montreal is second to none. Few, if any, do game ops better than Montreal. And it's not as, like, Toronto gets suffocated by history, right? They really get choked by it. and at times it's ham-fisted and awkward, but not in Montreal. It is a real celebration because it's done with a sense of class. And in some ways, in Montreal, it's done with a sense of understatement, which makes it that much better. And Paul Gallant is the gentleman who runs the game ops here and puts all those things together. So I don't think Paul's on Twitter or anything. I can give you his Twitter handle or anything. But just so we have it out there and everyone knows, if you're looking for someone to heap praise upon for how they do it in Montreal, Paul Gallant is that guy. Anyway, just want to get that out there.
Last night also gave us Boston and Detroit for the second straight game. I thought Boston obviously controlled play. They hop on two mistakes in the first period by Detroit, go up 2-0, and then from there it's the Tuukka Rask show. I don't think that Detroit's done. I still think this has the opportunity to be a seven-game series, and it wouldn't surprise me to see them come back and win game four. The real X factor right now is Zetterberg. Zetterberg is practicing with the wings. He's picking up the pace in practice with the wings, and you have the feeling that we are going to see him in this series. It is just a matter of when.
Another big story in all this is Boston's penalty kill has been outstanding. Mm-hmm. Patrice Bergeron has been fantastic. Brad Marchand has been fantastic. Zdeno Chara and Dougie Hamilton at times on the PK as well have been great. But very quietly here, you're right, it became the Tuukka Rask show last night. Very quietly here, in three games, Tuukka Rask has allowed two goals.
Yeah.
That's
we go from great goaltending to Ray Emery, who was terrible last night.
Yeah, he fought it.
he wasn't bad in the first two games in MSG. I actually thought in the victory he played really, really well. But
game two, he was good.
Just gift wrap it for the Rangers, will you please? I mean, good God. Yeah. That flubbed glove save that I think Stepan was right there for to cash in last night was atrocious. He was a liability. I mean, obviously, they'll go back to Mason in four now that he got some game time in last night. But Rangers go up 2-1. And, of course, the two moments everybody's talking about both involve Dan Carcillo. Let's talk about the one that maybe is a contentious one for Rangers fans and Flyers fans more than the other. Well, I don't know. They're both contentious. Matt Reed running into Carcillo last night would seem to be one of those glancing blow, rule 48, pick play kind of things that we've seen be penalized before. But watching the replay, there's a part of me that thinks maybe this is a Dan Carcillo decision by the NHL. Like maybe they thought he put a little mustard on it. What do you think?
Jeez, I hate sort of trying to put. I don't know. I have a hard time, unless it's really obvious, I have a hard time putting myself in that player's shoes, that player's skates.
I'm not saying he did it or didn't do it, but do you think that the perception could have been there from the league?
Hands down. Oh, totally. Okay. And it's just like there were some last night with the Jared Stoll hit, the interference call on Logan Couture. There were some right away on Twitter. It's like, oh, there's Logan Couture going down light again. When you watch it again, that was a heavy hit. You know, heavy interference body check that Jared Stoll laid on Logan Couture as he's getting back in the play. Like, that was
right, and then we also have that Marchand thing, too, from thing last night where people were claiming he was favoring the wrong leg and trying to fake an injury.
I know. Yeah, I don't know. But reputation-wise, sure, of course, it would be out there. The players, and we've had this
conversation.
We've had the conversation before. And I don't know where the line is, but it's like explaining jazz. I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it, and I know it when I hear it. Every player embellishes, but where's the line when embellishment becomes diving? I don't know other than to see it. I can't define it for you.
I guess I've always thought that maybe it's when you can apply the word chronic, you know? Like, no one really has a problem with masturbation until they become a chronic masturbator.
hey, stop that, son. You're going to go blind. No, Dad, just tell I need glasses.
No one has a problem with diving until they become a chronic diver, which Sid was at one point in his career, and look what's happened. People still think he does it when he doesn't do it anymore.
Yeah. A lot of the guys, though.
The other thing, obviously, was Carcillo celebrating his goal last night by...
Good God.
it was almost like he was using the glass as a mirror or a two-way mirror, like knowing somebody was on the other side of it but not really paying attention to them. It was one of the greatest bit of trolling... celebrations I can ever recall. It was amazingly good, wasn't it?
And he's an ex-Flyer, which adds a whole other level onto it. But you could tell, like, he was furious when he got the call. And that was a chintzy call. I don't think that he should have been sent off for that. But it put him in a great position coming out of the box on the two-on-one. And by the way, it's a bad pass from Boyle as well. I mean, that's like Boyle's like skipping rocks. He's not laying that one flat and sliding. Well, it might have been some bad ice, too, but that was a bad pass. And he's able to tap it through the legs of Ray Emery, who didn't close up the five hole. And that's one of the reasons why he got the hook and will probably never see a game again this series. But so Carcillo was hot from the moment of the call. You could just see Carcillo fuming in the box to like smoke coming out of his ears, because that's the kind of guy that Dan Carcillo is. And then out of the box and right away. And it's almost as if the goal wasn't the catharsis for him. Like normally when a guy scores a goal, that's a cathartic moment and cut. Done. Not so much for Dan Carcillo. Dan Carcillo's cathartic moments with that goal was the celebration. Like it was to the point where I said to myself, I don't know what Dan Carcillo liked more, the goal or his celebration in the guy in the Claude Giroux jersey's face. I can't tell which moment Carcillo liked more. Because most guys will say it's the goal.
I'll say it was the latter was.
You're probably right.
John Roberts checks in and says, diving is faking a penalty, embellishing, making a penalty look worse to help get the call. That's a pretty good definition, I think. That's a pretty good definition. Putting, you know, if you feel a stick on you and you go and you fall down, that's maybe a dive. If there's already a penalty at play here and you kind of put a little cherry on top to draw the call, that's embellishment.
So if you feel the stick on your hip but there's no tug and you go down, that's diving. If you feel a tug and you throw your arms up in the air, that's embellishment.
Yes. Okay. If you feel a stick kind of fly by your face and you snap your head back like you're in Dealey Plaza, that is a dive. If you actually get a blade under your visor and you snap your head back, that could be embellishment.
Or just being terrified. I know I'd do the same thing.
Being human.
Yeah, it's 2 minutes for being human. There's a stick in my eye. Come on, bud.
Finally, last night, the San Jose Sharks go up 3-0. One win away from a pie in the face of a plush lion, sir.
Holy smokes, was I thinking about you last night. In that overtime, I'm like, oh, man, Wish is one goal away from being one game away from a plushy pie.
I've been really noodling through who I want to throw the pie in Bailey's face, because it's going to happen. I mean, the Kings are done. So I've been trying to figure it out. The two leading candidates for the pie tossing in the face of Bailey, in case you've not been hip to this, Bailey, the mascot from the Kings, offered to make a wager with me on the Sharks and the Kings because I picked the Sharks to win the series in the Cup. We settled on the loser gets a pie thrown in their face while wearing the jersey, a jersey of the winner's choice. I'm up 3-0 in this right now. I'm in the process, Merrick, of figuring out not only the constitution of the pie, but also who will be throwing the pie. I am right now leaning towards banana cream, although lemon meringue is in the mix as well. And as far as the pie tosser, the lovely Melanie Collins, who I worked with in Sochi, who many of you may know from the Yahoo videos, volunteered her services. She is on the West Coast and obviously would be someone that I would trust with a pie. But I was on CSN Bay Area yesterday doing a TV hit, and one of the hosts brought up an interesting idea that I have to admit intrigues me, although I don't know if this would be a willing participant. And that would be to have San Jose Sharks mascot SJ Sharky be the one who throws the pie in the face of the LA Kings mascot.
Ooh, that's an intriguing possibility. Or do you do it from... like, do you do the Ducks mascot? Like, anyone who's really got some good old-fashioned venom for the LA Kings.
Right. Like, Drew Remenda.
True.
Tell you what, Randy, you've got a pie here.
Trying to think. That should be a QOD. Who would be the perfect... That'll be the QOD when San Jose wraps it up. Who's the perfect person to throw the pie?
Yeah, I need someone to figure out who would throw the pie.
Jen Neal from Yahoo.
Jen Neal should be in the mix as well.
She'd be considered. Absolutely. Our friend Hannah, who's a San Jose Sharks fan, who we've had here on the podcast before, she might be one. I know she'd be one because she tweeted me and said she'd volunteer not only, ready for this wish, not only to throw the pie, but to bake it as well.
There's been a lot of people asking me if Will Wheaton should throw the pie, and he's a Kings fan, so it would be kind of a, almost a.
That's like mafia, dig your own grave kind of stuff, bud.
It's almost masochistic to allow Will to throw the pie, but I do love the idea of getting him involved in a bit of Puck Daddy whimsy, and also the visual of seeing Ensign Wesley Crusher throw a pie in the face of a plush lion is something that probably is something I could never conceive of until this moment in my life.
You know who lives in L.A. for the summers?
Who?
Strombo.
He's a major celebrity now, too.
Welcome to the NHL, George. Your first duty. Even before hosting the NHL Awards, by the way, in Las Vegas.
I know. That's a big gig.
Get him to whip the pie.
Get him to whip the pie.
You want George?
Hashtag whip the pie. Pie. the Sharks win this game 4-3 in overtime. Patrick Marleau with the game winner. Obviously, he's gutless. I don't understand why Patrick Marleau would score the game winning goal in overtime. I mean, he is a gutless, weak willed playoff folder.
Oh my God, we're still back at that. Holy smokes. Oh, by the way, on that play, we talk about Cedric Paquette with Tampa, the big deal, Weiss goal. He's behind the net. Bad on that one. Bad on the penalty against Michael Bournival, which led to the Max Pacioretty goal. If you're pinning goat horns on that overtime, Slavovoyanov. Mm-hmm. With the weak backhand attempt, and then losing it again to Joe Pavelski, which leads out to Patrick Marleau, who just throws. And funny because the bookend goals last night, the Burns goal and the Marleau goal, both knuckleballs, both of them. And Robin Regier is a perfect screen. Oh wait, he plays on the Kings. Perfect screen in front of Jonathan Quick yesterday.
He was a special kind of terrible last night. Voinov's not been good. Like Daryl Sutter said, there's about five or six guys in this series that you could point to and say have been liabilities. But here's the most amazing thing about this series and about the Sharks right now. And I'll tie it into the Blues. And by the way, we don't know if Backes is going to play tonight. There's
50-50.
Some talk he might. 50-50. If it's 50-50, I'm guessing he's in, but we'll see. When Backes goes out, you see how the Blues have to not only do they lose a great face-off guy, a team leader, a guy who can put the puck in the net, they also have to reset their lineup in a way that throws off the chemistry of all of their other lines. San Jose has the opposite problem. They get Tomas Hertl back late in the season, and now all of a sudden you see the trickle down. Now guys that were playing one or two are down to three, down to four. The three is down to four. Now you're seeing this situation where the depth at forward the Sharks have is really on display. And not only that, but you talk about the speed advantage the Sharks have had in this series. I think teams sometimes just need a pacing horse. I think sometimes teams just need a guy who can burn out there, and by virtue of the way he skates and competes, everybody's game is elevated, and I think that guy is Hertl. You see the way that this man has been he's a baby. This kid's been flying around the ice, okay? To me, it's like a stalking horse it's like a pace-setting horse in the Kentucky Derby. It's like the 1A entry for you. The horse that just goes as fast as it can to set the pace of the race, and the other horses have to catch up to him. And Hurdle's had that impact on this series. It's been amazing in this series.
How many times have you heard from various corners, it's time to blow up the San Jose Sharks? It's time to dismantle the San Jose Sharks. It's time to destroy the San Jose Sharks. Burn it to the ground and start all over again. If you're out there and you've ever said that, look at what has happened with the San Jose Sharks now. This is the rebuild on the go because Greg just mentioned Hertl. You can talk about Brent Burns, who got the first goal yesterday. You can talk about Logan Couture. You can talk about Mark-Edward Vlasic. Exactly. The list goes on and on of how this team has transitioned away from Jumbo Joe and Patrick Marleau. Brent Burns is another one. You throw that still a relatively young player in the mix as well. This team has done a great job rejuvenating itself on the fly. The way to rebuild a franchise isn't always burn it to the ground because there's a lot of gambles that come with that. See Edmonton, see Minnesota, see Columbus. Like, it's really hard to start from scratch. The way San Jose is doing, because you can see the future. Like, we watch the games and say, okay, this is going to be Pavelski, it's going to be Couture, it's going to be Hertl, it's going to be Burns. You know, it's going to be Mark-Edward Vlasic. You can see it. It's right in front of your eyes, and it's complemented by veteran players that can still get things done. Joe Thornton may still be the best passer in the NHL, hands down. Patrick Marleau, as much as, you know, some former NHLers and former San Jose Sharks consider him to be gutless, is still scoring clutch goals and can still move his feet really well for a big man, to the point where you say, is he really that big? No man that big should be able to skate that fast. Like the San Jose model is the best way to do it. The problem is they haven't won the Stanley Cup. And that's just it. And that's what he might say ultimately. And that's where this team is a failure, because they haven't won the big enchilada yet. But,
right.
You know, you talked about, is there something special with the Montreal Canadiens, the ghost of the Forum and all that kind of stuff. The more the season went on, sure, there was a couple of, you know, spells there where, you know, Stalock had to come in for Antti Niemi because he didn't like the push from the backup. But there does seem to be something different about this year's edition of the San Jose Sharks. And you know what it is, Wish? The fourth line.
Yeah.
It's Brown. It's Desjardins. And it's Rafi Torres. It's almost as if Doug Wilson said, if we're going to get out of California, we got to do it shooting. We got to do it with both guns out, and we gotta, you know, unload with everything.
They've tried to have muscle on their fourth line before, but this mix seems to be the right one. They got it right, and you're right. I mean, there is a from top to bottom in this series. They roll four lines. Everybody seems to know their role. They've got the adaptability of a guy like Pavelski, who can play basically every position and on every line in any situation. It's been fun to watch. If they win this series, though, I do leave this series a little bit wary about the goaltending, don't you? I mean, they're winning despite Niemi right now.
Well, there was a team in 2010 that did the same thing, and they won the Stanley Cup. Like, I think it's nice to get great goaltending.
That's so unfair, man. He was fine during that run. He's better in that run than he is now, right, for the Sharks.
I think he's a better goaltender now than he was in 2010, dude. And he had a better defense.
But he was fine in 2010.
If the
Flyers had won that series, they would have won despite their goaltending. I still think that Niemi was an underrated aspect of that run for Chicago. I really do.
I'm not as heavy on that as you are. But nonetheless, we should throw in Matt Nieto as well, as another guy. Robert Teed mentioned that. Greg M. On Twitter as well. As far as one of those guys, you can see his future building blocks for the San Jose Sharks. And they haven't had the luxury of picking in the top five. It's not as if they've they've gone Colorado route, and here's Landeskog, and here's Duchesne, and here's Nathan MacKinnon. You know, they've been picking, you know, down low. Thank you very much. It's been a great job by Doug Wilson.
Speaking of which, before we get to going postal, let you bring up Nathan MacKinnon. Let's talk about the Calder nomination.
Hang on, one more thing.
Oh yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I want to make this point about San Jose and LA.
Okay. We have a lot of time, Eric. You can get it out. It's okay. We have plenty of time.
Okay, I'm looking at the top of the hour. We have to get to the top of there. I got nothing to do after that. I'll be fine. 108 hits last night. Like, this series is getting like 98 hits a night, 95 hits a night, 108 hits last night. And you know what's nice about it? The officials let it happen. Like, I said, you know what? We know you're going to hit for keeps. Well, lay it into each other. We're only going to call it if it's, you know, blatantly interference. We're going to let you guys hammer each other. 108 of them last night. And at no point did the officials say, we're going to put our foot down and show you who's really in charge here. I thought that may be the best.
But as you know, Merrick, You can only deliver hits if you don't have the puck, so I'm guessing the puck was just there
for most
of the night, and they just were hitting each other. Yeah.
That was perhaps the single best officiated game that I've seen in the playoffs this season, was last night.
Oh, F off. I know why you're saying that.
No, I'm not. Even if it wasn't your buddy Tim Peel, I'd still say the same thing. Him and Rooney were awesome last night. They were.
I had so many people on my feed last night, and not just because I'm the Tim Peel guy. Just you can go and search it out on Twitter. Mm-hmm. How many people were complaining about Tim Peel last night?
That's because whenever he officiates, that's all they do, because they are brain dead zombies when it comes to officials.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff Merrick, friend of the people, calling you all brain dead. Remember who your buddy is.
Yep.
Calder Trophy nominations come out today. Nathan MacKinnon, Tyler Johnson, and Andre Palat. Yeah. Are your top three. First time since Taves and Kane, two Rookie of the Year nominations, come from the same team. I have to imagine, Merrick, that the reason this happened, not only because these are the top three scorers in the league amongst rookies, but I imagine that the defensive prospects for the Calder all cannibalized the votes for themselves. Truba, Krug, Lindholm, who was in my top five.
What, Olli Mata?
I got to imagine all those guys all ate each other's votes, because I figured that we'd get one defenseman in the top three and only one of the Lightning guys in the top three. But it turned out it's MacKinnon, Johnson, and Palat. I don't disagree with any of them, by the way. For my top five on the ballot, by the way, sir, one was this young plucky upstart named Nathan MacKinnon. You may have heard of him. Two, Tyler Johnson. I actually thought wire to wire Johnson impressed me more in his rookie season than Palat did. Palat was without question the better player for a good stretch towards the end of the season, point per game in the last 3 months of the season. But Johnson was impressive. That's not, you could put Palat second on my ballot and I'll feel great about life and say you're absolutely right, but I got Johnson second. Hampus Lindholm is my third, because if you've known anything about my voting patterns through the years as a PHWA voter, I have a unsatiable affinity for defensive defensemen and promoting them in my voting. And Lindholm was a great player for the Ducks this year, but best defenseman Corsi-wise. Didn't get the top defensive assignments, but I thought he was good. But again, you could put Trouba in there, Armada in there, and I'd be fine with it too, Krug. Palat was fourth, and then fifth was a goaltender. Can you guess who that goaltender was, Jeff Merrick?
Who was rookie goaltender, Greg Wyshynski?
Eddie Lack.
Really? Are you with Eddie Lack? Did you say Sean?
I know that you could
Who did you have number two?
Tyler Johnson.
So you had no Sean Monahan in there?
Did not have Monahan in there, no.
Really? So Eddie Lack over Sean Monahan.
I wanted to give love to a goalie.
Okay.
I wanted to, because again, you're dealing again with position players versus goaltenders. I actually thought there were three guys. I mean, you could say Kemper from the Wild. You could say Anderson from the Ducks.
Not the body.
You could say Lack. I think Lack deserves it because he played average, maybe above average, in ridiculously adverse circumstances. I mean, just terrible circumstances.
Whatever are you talking about?
And I thought he acquitted himself well.
I don't know what you're talking about. Challenging circumstances in Vancouver?
I thought he acquitted himself well. So that's my top five. Again, the rookie class beyond MacKinnon was one in which you could make an argument for any guy, and I will just nod in agreement and say, yep, uh-huh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. As long as we all agree that McKinnon's number one, which my good friend James Myrtle, for whatever reason, did not feel that way.
Who, he didn't have McKinnon Trouba. Number one?
Trouba, number one.
Over Nathan MacKinnon?
I don't quite get that. I don't quite understand it.
Headline grabber.
Myrtle may... You think that's what it is? You think it's just
I don't know.
Trolling?
I don't know. I think Jason Trouba is going to be, and he already is really good. I think he's going to be a hell of a defenseman in the NHL, and he's going to be a future captain for the Winnipeg Jets. Like, I think the transition goes from Andrew Ladd to Jacob Trouba. That's how strongly I feel about Jacob Trouba. I don't know that I'd put him over Nathan MacKinnon, though, for a second.
And the Lindholm thing, again, was me trying to acknowledge what was, I thought, a really great season for him, but also, you know, it's got to give some love to the defensive defenseman.
You're right, though.
They don't get any love.
The debate is meaningless, though. I mean, this is Nathan MacKinnon's. See you later. Don't even bother opening. You know what? When you're whoever ends up handing out this award, maybe if it's Strombo himself in Las Vegas, I'll tell George, don't even open the envelope. You want to really send a message? Don't open it. Just say Nathan MacKinnon. Just leave it. Let's leave that envelope locked. Put it in the Hockey Hall of Fame and pull it out in 50 years and see if we are right.
Yep,
it's Nathan MacKinnon.
And then because it's the PHWA voting, the winner is actually Alex Ovechkin. So. they hate when we make jokes about that. But I'm sorry, the statute of limitations on jokes about them screwing up that vote. I think we've got at least another year of it before we can say okay, it's overkill. All right, with that, it's time for a Wednesday favorite.
Maddie French fries.
You want to do a
mailbag segment every week?
It's time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski. Not that deep.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyshynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Hey, you guys, I was just about to have my chocolate shake, and you guys couldn't make it in the room. Why?
Maddie said he was watching
something.
Sorry,
Maddie.
He said he was watching something.
Porno.
He said he's watching something.
Josh Markle writes in regards to policing and politics for dirty hits and suspensions, what if the team of the player suspended was forced to pay the salary and penalize the cap hit of the injured player for the time he misses?
Hang on. Didn't someone on this podcast float that at the beginning of the year? Were you actually...
Was it you?
I believe so. You pay the player for that for the time that you're out. Yeah. Because I don't... I mean...
I like some of those ideas. I'm not a huge fan of taking away
I don't know. I go back and forth on that taking away a roster space thing because there's part of me that, again, like we talked about yesterday with the whole eye for an eye argument for suspensions, there can be so much chicanery when it comes to a fourth liner taking out a top liner or vice versa. That kind of stuff makes me a little oogie. But the idea that there could be some additional financial penalty for the team, I've always been in favor of that. Because when you talk about, like, how do we clean up the game? Okay, well, you start with who are the people that keep employing people that do injurious things. Well, it's the general manager, and it's the coach who plays them, right? So I've always been in favor of the coach and the GM taking a financial hit whenever guys get suspended, because the more you attack their pocketbooks and their bank accounts, the more they're going to be like, you know what? Maybe don't stick out your knee next time, asshole, because now I'm $150,000 lighter and my kid needs new shoes.
And when it goes to the player that you offended, like if Matt Cooks, you know, the money that he's going to forfeit, depending on how long this suspension is, although in the playoffs it won't be anything. Let's say it happened in the regular season. He's forfeiting something like, let's say, $250,000. If he's forfeiting $250 large, and he has to forfeit that money, not to the Players Emergency Assistance Fund, but rather to Tyson Berry, like write out, a personal check to Tyson Berry, I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
Think about that as a player. That stings. That is reaching into your pocket, taking your money, and giving it to him.
And also, it has to be one of those big publishers' clearinghouse checks.
That's right.
And
you have big to pose novelty with check.
It. Yeah, big novelty check. Matt Riegler, Game Show Friday Superstar, writes in, is it me or do a lot of teams play Hafa Nagila in order to pump up the fans? Seriously, why is that and whose bar mitzvah is it? L'chaim boys. Random Jewish current NHLers, Mike Brown, Eric Nystrom, and Mike Camilleri.
Very good.
Yeah, I guess Halpern, is Halpern out of the league or is he still in the league?
He's still in the league. Mike Camilleri is half Jewish. His mother is Jewish. His father is Italian.
His father is a squid. why do they play Hafa Nagila? Because it's a joyous song.
It's a fun tune, man.
And it's also you have to remember that there are certain songs that are arena staples because of the way they sound on an arena organ. Like, I don't think they're going into the My First Party CD and hitting the Hafa Nagila track half the time. I think it's an arena organ song, and I think it plays well on an organ, don't you?
I think it sounds good, man. I really do. I got no problem with it. Bar mitzvah, not.
Let's see here. We have this one that we already answered a couple of times back. One puck short. Hypothetical question, but if Toronto had made the postseason, would Phil Kessel be in the conversation for the Hart Trophy?
Probably. Probably would. Yep.
It really kind of depends on how they played
in the last 15 games.
That's the thing. Come down to it. Like, if he had played the way he played in the last 15 games, I don't know if you could make that argument that he deserved to be in the top three above a Getzlaff or above a Claude Giroux, who I think were my top three, or above a Tyler Seguin, for example. But obviously you make the argument for Kessel for Hart. I mean, without him in the lineup, who's scoring?
Occasionally James Van Riemsdyk, and when he's healthy, Joffrey Lupul. But you're right, Kessel's our go-to guy. And here's a question from John Erskine, who just mentioned James Myrtle.
John Erskine?
Not John Erskine.
Oh.
Not the old Quinty Hawk. I hope someone got that one.
Not the old Pylon.
I like John Erskine. Not the guy that I saw run the table with the London Knights and not lose a single fight in the OHL. John Erston submits, has Myrtle ever been on the MVSW podcast? He should be. I agree, he should be. Well, Maddie,
we tried to get him on, but because of the TSN Sports Network wars, we couldn't get him on.
That was it, because he does stuff with TSN Radio. That was it. Okay.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I'm sure that he'll be invited on to the podcast on the Bar Down blog, the Schmerich versus Vyshynski podcast that they'll do. You know, not saying that there are certain things that are pale imitations of other things, but they just started doing jersey fouls last night.
What?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Oh, you missed that whole thing. I don't want to make this into a Bar Down thing, but they did jersey fouls. And they did jersey fouls that we did in 2011.
Come on, really?
Yeah, I know.
Listen, I don't want to make this thing contentious, but I will say this.
I know.
I will say this.
I'm backing
and,
up.
And this may be related to the TSN issue. It may not be. I will simply say this. If you want me to lose respect for you in record time, like we're talking within milliseconds, go up the food chain to complain about something I did before you talk to me. This has been a problem for me since I worked at Burger King, Merrick. If somebody had a problem with me at Burger King but wouldn't discuss it with me but went to the regional manager, it never really sat well with me. And to this day, as a professional, it still doesn't sit well with me where if you've got beef with me, you don't take it to me, you take it up the food chain. I hate that.
You worked at Burger King?
No, you didn't know that?
No.
Yeah, high school. It was my my first real high school job was working at Burger King, and what they discovered about me was two things. One, that I had a car, so that meant I had to close the Burger King a lot, mop up, and that kind of thing. And actually, if you for you Devils fans out there, and also you Penguins fans out there, if you recall the 95 Cup playoff game where Scott Stevens scored a goal from the slot against the Penguins, and it was a big, huge late goal. I actually listened to that game on a transistor radio, believe it or not, while mopping the floor at Burger King. But what they discovered is that I was much more effective in a public relations role than anything else, so I soon was able to escape the flame broiler in the back and become the charismatic drive-thru guy at Burger King.
You know what's going to happen? In about 3, 2, 1 seconds, Tally Deshane's going to tweet in and reference the exact moment where you actually told me you worked at Burger King, and I'm a dummy for not remembering it.
It's probably the case.
Probably the case. But, okay, so what was your, before we get back to the going postal segment here, what was your favorite thing to make? Like, what were you top drawer at making? Like, no one could make blank at Burger King better than Greg Wyshynski.
Well, that would be the, because, you know, I don't know if you knew this, but your boy might have been a little bit heavier when he was a child than he
Told
is now.
Yeah.
So in the summertime, when I would get off of work and go back to my house and play Nintendo until like 3 in the morning, I used to make a double Whopper with cheese and barbecue sauce with onion rings on it. And what's amazing is that eventually they got around to creating that sandwich, too.
Yep.
But yeah, that was my go-to. And I would melt the cheese on top of the onion rings. God damn, that was good.
Onion rings,
The way it worked at Burger King, and I'm sure this was the same way in many places in food service, at the end of the night, whatever's left is yours. You keep what you kill. Yeah,
yep.
It's amazing. Let's see here. Real quick, because I know we got to go, probably. Jake Ibe writes in, for Greg, if you could have one superpower, what would it be, and would you use it for good or evil? That'd obviously be the power of mind control. It used to be, when I was a kid, I'd say the power of invisibility, because I was horny. But then I said to myself, if I'm horny, then mind control would also be beneficial, wouldn't it?
Yeah, totally.
And for Jeff, this is a question about Canadian kids television.
All right.
I don't know any of this shit, but okay. Here you go. Mr. Dress-Up or the Friendly Giant?
I watched Mr. Dress-Up a lot more than Friendly Giant, but it's funny because when I worked at CBC, there's a big, huge Friendly Giant exhibit in this little CBC kids television section. So I would end up sometimes, you know, I'd go downstairs and get a bite or something, get a bowl of soup, and I'd sit there and watch all the Friendly Giants. So in my youth, it was Dress-Up, but then as I got older and actually worked at CBC, I actually found that I was watching Giant a lot more than I did, obviously, when I was a kid. So, as a younger man, dress up. As an older gentleman, Giants. So, little from column A, little from column B. It's so true. I'd stand there like a doofus and watch Friendly Giants. Black and white shows.
Finally, this is from Dave Lembo. What is the best shampoo to get sticky pie out of lion fur? Well, I guess we'll find out, won't we?
Yeah, that's going to be tough. Now, is he going to put this... hang on. Is he going to... Here's a couple of things that I'd insist upon. I don't know how much of a contract or an agreement you guys have drawn up, but I would assume that once the pie has been delivered, this will be on the LAKings.com website. and the LA Kings Twitter feed will tweet out a picture of it.
If not, I know that the Yahoo video boys that I work with in Sochi are cognizant of the bet, and they have already said that they plan on filming it too.
Very
so
good.
All of these things are good things, and it'll be fun. This is finally from Section 328 with regards to Havan Aguila. We need a now that's what I call music traditional religious songs edition. That's very true. Silent Night.
Yeah, that's good.
All of that stuff. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening today and for participating in Going Postal as
usual. Hang on a second.
Hang on. What?
Melissa Bergeson gets in under the wire. Oh, lion fur. I thought that question was going to end in something about a baby bear.
Oh, my God. Great callback. That's an amazing callback.
Oh, Melissa, you're awesome. That's good.
All right, everybody, that's the show for today. I am Greg Wyszynski of Yahoo Sports.
Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet. Tonight, what am I doing tonight? Hockey Central, 11 o'clock Eastern, recapping all three games, really. The Penguins, the Blue Jackets, the Ducks, and the Stars, the Blues, and the Chicago Blackhawks, all three game fours this evening. Tonight with Neil Smith and our good buddy John Garrett. Cheech will be aboard. So, essentially,
Cheech,
our man Cheech. So essentially what it's going to mean is watching games for however many hours it takes to get all these games done and bugging Cheech about WHA stories and WHA questions about the Minnesota Fighting Saints, New England Whalers, and the Birmingham Bulls. Poor Cheech. I feel bad for him when he works with me because all I do is bug him for stories about, you know, Billy Butters and Glenn Sonmore and these types of guys. But too bad, Cheech. What you signed up for?
And finally, again, the Backus mystery. There, you got some people saying that Backus could be a go. Jeremy Rutherford 2 hours ago, it's looking like Backus will be in the lineup later on, saying Backus wasn't on the ice and Hitchcock is playing coy. Were I a betting man, I'd say he plays in this game, which, again, just listen, you're already facing two lawsuits, all right? We all saw what that dude looked like after getting hit by Seabrook. I did not expect him back for game four, did you?
Nope, not for 1 second. And it's actually to the point where, and I don't know. I don't know his health. I'm not his doctor. I haven't talked to David Backus. I don't know David Backus. I'm just, you know, talking shit. But you're only in trouble in a playoff series when you lose at home. I know it's a defending Stanley Cup champions, and you want to win every game that you can. But is there a rush to bring him back?
Yes.
You're up 2-1. Really? Yeah, you're
up 2-1. Their face-off numbers in Game 1 weren't good. Their face-off numbers in Game 2 were very good. And their face-off numbers in Game 3 were worse than they were in Game 1. I think there's every reason to bring him back. Their offense is better. Their lineup is more balanced when he's in there. They need him. They need him to win. I mean, Hitchcock, that's not hyperbole from Hitchcock when he says that Backus is their Taves.
Yeah.
So they need him. But at what cost, Jeff Merrick? What about the children?
What about this man's health and what he's been through? And yes, the children.
What about the children, sir?
Think about that.
All right. That's the show for today. Thank you, everybody, for chiming in. And also thank you, again, not going down this road. Thanks to everybody who chimed in with support after yesterday's podcast. And at the very least, some level of understanding and all that other jive. And you guys
but
are the best.
But not just support, but understanding and education as well. So thank you to everyone who smartened
exactly.
us up a little bit.
You guys are cool, and we love you, and we will talk to you on the morrow. Enjoy hockey, everybody.
Happy hockey.
Bye.
Happy hockey.
Happy birthday, Shakespeare. Yeah, Shakespeare's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite Shakespeare work, sir? I don't think we talked about that.
King Lear was always my favorite. All four high tragedies were my favorite. I did mention Titus Andronicus off the in the intro. Big fan of the slasher play, but Lear was always my... It was funny, in high school, Romeo and Juliet was the only one that we read, but then when I got into university and took second year Shakespearean tragedies, Lear was it for me. Lear or Macbeth?
This was a test, by the way, because obviously the answer is A Midsummer Night's Dream.
I hated the comedies.
A character named Puck.
That's true, too. That's a good point. It is very true. But I couldn't stand the comedies.
Why not?
Because comedy is the hardest thing to write, and I don't think that Shakespeare did it well. And Woody Allen always nailed it. He said, you know, every year at the Academy Awards, you know,
it's, boy, did he.
Well, that's true too. If it was going slower than 20K, Woody was on it. It's easier to make people feel sad than feel like the hardest thing to do is write a comedy. I agree with Woody Allen about this 100%. But every year at the Academy Awards, when I open the Academy Awards, which basically nothing, but it's never comedies that win. And I would maintain the hardest thing to do, and maybe one of the most important things you can do in life, is make people laugh. I don't know why that never gets. You can answer this better than I can. All I can do is ask a question. Why does that never get rewarded? Whereas, you know, drama and thoughtfulness, like, that always gets rewarded. Making people upset and making emotional. How come comedy always gets a short end of the stick?
It's a classic conundrum, and it's been one of the problems with the Oscars for years, which is how can a really well-constructed comedy not get the same accolades as a drama? And I hearken back to things like A Fish Called Wanda, which is a great film from start to finish with great performances and a strong narrative and twists and turns and also big laughs. You go to a thing like The 40-Year-Old Virgin is another movie that I think is like a picture-perfect comedy that also can make you feel something too. And they never get any credit for that sort of thing. Even less than superhero movies, they get less credit. But yeah, it's a bit of a bother. Obviously, my answer for real is The Taming of the Shrew, which served as the basis for the classic Julia Stiles, Heath Ledger film, 10 Things I Hate About You.
Is that right?
That's it.
See, I didn't see that, so I don't know. But I saw Strange Brew, and that's based on Hamlet. Hamlet.
This is so weird. You didn't see a film?
I know. Remarkable, eh? Don't worry. When my kids get to high school, I'll start watching movies again.
Real quick, pop culturally, because I know people care about this. Orphan Black is back, and the first episode was ridiculously awesome. It's the most. If you're not into Orphan Black, go back and binge watch the first season. You need to. You'll not understand a damn thing going on if you don't. But then you'll be up to speed. You can watch the second season. The first episode was great. It's one of my favorite series in a long time. And catch it now and enjoy it now, because it's conspiracy-based show, which means that it's going to eventually become a train wreck of contradiction and strained narrative. But watch it now. It's really good.
Can I end this podcast?
Yeah, please.
With a tweet from our dear friend and Red Wings fan, Monica McAllister. I can never mock my husband for his ADD again, because Wyshynski and Merrick have been trying and failing to end MVSW for 10 minutes.
Yeah, it happens. It happens sometimes. So you know when your grandma says goodbye but then keeps on starting a new topic, says Matt Chance? Yeah, that's pretty much how this is. All right, bye, Grandma. We have to go.
We gotta go now.
I had a piece of...
No.
But there's a chicken
go.
In the oven. Have some candy
go.
In the dish,
go,
please.
Grandma.
No, Greggy, come back, please.
Bye,
but there's candy, there's chicken in the oven, Greggy, please.